How you feeling, E-Dog?
Pretty well.
What are we doing?
We're flowing. I think we're going with the flow right now.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, we're going with the flow.
So we got some special people, right?
And we got our good friend Alex here, who's going to tell us what it's about.
Hey.
Tell us how this stuff works. And another friend, Sonny. How you doing, Sonny?
Good, good. How's it going?
Sonny's going to tell us, like, what do the people want to know about Bitcoin? How come you guys aren't all buying Bitcoin yet? You got all the questions, right, that we need to answer. And once we answer those questions, everyone will know, like, go do it right now, right, like, today.
Yeah, yeah, we could work up to that.
Yeah, so no pressure.
Yeah, yeah, just, for sure. Know. Well, I want to absorb as much information as I can from you three before I do any devil's advocate questionnaireing.
We like that. We like that.
Yeah, can we get, sure. Can Alex, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I got into Bitcoin in 2018. It took over my life like a virus. And I've been involved with it in pretty large capacity for every day since then, over the past 5 years or however long it's been. I work for a Bitcoin mining company, so we sell mining hardware right now. I initially thought I was going to be a social worker, like your podcast theme, because like personal healing is a big passion of mine. And I was driving to school every day, listening to the Bitcoin Standard on audiobook, and started to learn about time preference and the way that money influences it. And it was like, this Bitcoin thing is probably the most important thing, because I'm, you know, driving to school, looking at people at the bus stop, you know, probably not in the best situations, trying to figure out, like, how do we help people that are hurting in our society? And, you know, seeing that the money is directly attached to that, like people's foundations getting pulled from under them, and just how, you know, awful it is. And, you know, them watching all the money printing, like, really, really accelerate in the last couple of years, just kind of confirmed that belief and, yeah, jumped fully in. So that's a little bit about me.
That's awesome, dude.
I think that you hear that story a lot in the, you know, once someone's met that threshold where they're really all in, you hear a similar story where it's like, I started going down this rabbit hole, I learned this, and it kind of started to click. And then it's like, and once you get in there, you can't get out. It's like, it's like an awakening of sorts. It's like, it's very clear now that this is the way forward. You know, once you break, you know, you're orange pilled, you know, it's, you hear that a lot.
Yeah. I'm intrigued about the social worker aspect. So what was it that got you to that, you know, realization that social work was like really what your calling was at first?
Yeah, I mean, I had a rough childhood, I guess,
okay,
would be how I explain it. But yeah, I just like ran through the system and had a really awful time. And then when I was about 16, had a pretty big, you know, life change and step down to this personal healing process of, you know, being wrapped or being, finding some really like helpful individuals. Like I grew up a pastor's kid, had counseling, psychiatry thrown at me, wasn't very helpful, caused me to really distrust authority. So that made, I think that made that process a little bit more difficult. And so I went through this pretty, you know, powerful journey of healing myself, and it was like, a lot of this is done really poorly in this field, and just in the general field of psychiatry, especially for kids. I think, you know, adults is a little bit different, because you go and seek these things out voluntarily. You know, you decide when you want help, unless, you know, the courts get involved, which happens a lot. But for kids, it's just, you know, they don't have any ability to choose, and then they're just subjected to all this nonsense, like with the public school system. And then if they don't have a choice, like you don't choose which house you grow up in. If things are really messed up, you're going to be impacted by it. And the general society is sick, and is not very helpful in that process of leading people towards healing and restoration. And so that saw all those things and was like, you know, I think my experience is helpful in that. And these are the groups of people I want to target. And, you know, typical blind, like, I'm going to, you know, change the world and like help people in social work type mindset. So,
We talk a lot about that, you know, on this podcast, how our past kind of becomes our strengths, how those, you know, like surviving, like I'm, you know, right there with you, like, you know, pretty intense, like early childhood, like trauma, like stuff that's like taken, you know, still working it out, you know, and it's like, but it gives the, you know, gives us the ability to pay that forward and be able to relate to more people and like, you know, it's kind of a superpower, I think, you know, once you kind of own that and to come out of that victim role and like now I'm empowered and now I want to like help people. What's the best way to help people? And then if you go down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, you start to think like, well, this is a great way to help people. Yes. Like, what can I do in this? And that's the whole thing is people get so obsessed about price. And it's like, that's not what this is about. We're doing a new thing here. This, you got to get out of that mindset. And it's like, no, this is about building new things together. This is about, you know, working directly with people and switching to a new, you know,
method of
changing
things,
it all up. We got to like start over from, you know, from scratch, you know, as far as I'm concerned. I don't know. I don't know what can stay and what has to go, but
the thing about the societal society being sick. Do you see like the things that are happening right now is like a direct reflection of, you know, us as individuals not knowing what the best route is and just leaving it up to these, you know, these pharmaceutical companies that make these vaccines that, you know, lobby the laws into effect? Like, is this a reflection of us? You know, are we, you know, us in this room thinking in the same space to where, yeah, that's a result of our past and previous thinking. Now that we know better, how can we, you know, how can we inspire change? How can we really make some big differences in the world today? Because a lot of us are sick, you know, and to admit that at first is already tough as it is, but then to work towards, you know, what can I do to change this? How can I impact myself? You know,
I mean, I believe it's all about how you show up, you know, show up in your life and then let's like, and spend energy on people who actually are looking for something different, who want something new, who want healing or want help. Yeah. Like, because wasting your energy on someone who's stuck in the old, you know, that's deep in the matrix and they're not looking outside. It's like, okay, like on to the next, you know? So I think it really has to do with just showing up and being that thing, you know, and having conversations like this. I don't know. Yeah. I think it has to come from the inside out. Like, you know, like, cause you know, it's not going to happen on the news. The revolution will not be televised, right? Like, it's not, it's going to happen from the inside out, and it's, things are changing. Or things are already getting better, like on state level and stuff. It's like, I think that, like, it feels like with Bitcoin, things are getting embraced, like, right? Like, I mean, would you say that as far as government, you know, do you think there's going to be enough Bitcoiners in high up positions to kind of be a Trojan horse and change things like peacefully from the inside? Or do you think it's going to be like
a chaotic kind of transition?
Well, we're talking about a global currency, so it's going to be different everywhere.
That's true.
Some places it's going to be very chaotic and violent, and some places it's going to be more peaceful. In most places, it's going to be a mix of both. I think we're getting into the then they fight you stage. And so it's just everything's about incentives. And so these people in positions of power, you know, you mentioned like some lobbyists and corporations earlier, you know, government officials too, their entire position is dependent on this fiat system, essentially. And Bitcoin is a massive threat. You look at all these, like Tucson's a great example of this because 7 of the 10 top employers are government funded. And then you've got Raytheon, number 8, you know, which is government funded, but it's not necessarily a government agency. And so there's these big incentives, like those jobs will go away to a certain extent on a Bitcoin standard. Part of the reason is because you're not going to be able to fund them with money printing. And then another reason is Bitcoin is secured differently, and funds will be have to be raised to a certain extent voluntarily. And so when people realize this, these people in positions of power, they're going to get very upset. And I think the way we win isn't by, you know, getting politicians to flip sides, because they're essentially trying to eliminate their job in encouraging Bitcoin. And there are probably a handful of people out there that are willing to do stuff like that. But the majority of people, unfortunately, won't, based on that incentive. And I think we win by proliferating the technology as much as possible. So getting it in the hands of, you know, individuals that have, because it's a really powerful thing to do, is to just say no, you know, say no to corrupt individuals. You know, if you have somebody really pressing, you know, your buttons and harming you, you need to say no. And that's a relationship with our government today. And with all of these massive institutions. And we win by, you know, leaving and building systems outside of it, and, you know, really protecting ourselves. And so they might get a few of us in the process, but they're not going to get everybody. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Makes
I have,
sense to me. Checks
I have,
out.
Yeah, I have a, you know, I've looked into, you know, what legislation is being put forth here in Arizona. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with the SB 1341 that's being proposed. We've got like 8 of the representatives are for it. We've got 2 against. And do you know anything about the process of how that continues and what happens from there if we, you know, if it stays in this, you know, in this space to where we've got a majority saying that, yes, we're pro Bitcoin, integrating it as an acceptable form of currency here in Arizona, at least as the state department, or, you know, state legislation.
Yeah. So essentially what they're doing with this, I'm not sure what the actual process of it getting passed. Wendy Rogers, the one that put that
forward. It.
Yeah. She's kind of an entertaining individual. There was a vote last week to get her kicked out of the Arizona Congress because she tweeted some controversial stuff.
Anything you know of that you'd like to share?
Yeah, so she tweeted that the shooter, something, I'm paraphrasing, the shooter in Buffalo was a Fed, something along the lines of that.
Wow. So whistleblower, huh?
but, I mean, you know, like when we look at things like this, I think the thing I like to challenge people on is like, so why do these individuals have the right to tell us that we can start using Bitcoin as a currency, or that we now have permission not to get taxed on transactions? Like, where does their authority
begin and end?
Well, where does it even start?
Okay, yeah. Like,
where does it come from? So, like, sure, like, the bill is saying essentially that we wouldn't have to pay Arizona capital gains tax, which is, you know, kind of a silly thing. Why would you pay capital gains tax on a currency, especially one that is a national currency of 2 countries now?
Yeah,
right. It doesn't make any sense.
It's going to be more in the future. So that's what I like to push back on and just, you know, tell people is like, you know, I don't really care what they say in Washington or what they say in Phoenix. Like,
agreed.
Like, I'm going to operate. Like, I believe firmly I have the right to spend Bitcoin if I want to. I have the right to hold it. I have the right not to be surveilled. And I think other people do as well. I don't believe in.
Yeah. So it's, you know, once we're willing to take responsibility for ourselves and kind of step into what we deserve. But then you got to take responsibility. You can't have somebody holding your hand. And
Do you see the future here of what's happening with Bitcoin and the struggle for, or not even the struggle, but the adoption of it becoming global and more, more adopted, really? But do you see the traditional system as something that will find an avenue or a conduit to where it can be integrated, or will it, you know, because it's hard for me to believe that Bitcoin will go forward and the traditional system is gonna be like, oh, okay, no, it's good. You guys can run the show now, you know? And for them to say, all right, we're going to completely shut down this system. We'll work off your system. And, you know, but do you see kind of what the future holds as far as how it's going to integrate to where it's widely accepted, easier to, you know, more convenient to use, things of that nature, where people will start seeing the true value behind the way it works? Or, you know, I feel like it's going to be like stages, just as the internet grew in stages, you know? So that's just my from the outside looking in, but I'm loving your expertise when it comes to a lot of this, because it's like I get to nerd out again on just a different aspect, because Nate teaches me almost everything that I know, and I do more research for myself. But then to hear it from somebody else who, you know, you seem to know a lot more about the ins and outs of things than I
do. So how do we transition? What's that going to look like?
Yeah, I mean, it looks different for everybody.
I'm curious what it's going to be like here in the States.
Yeah. I mean, I can talk about what's happening now. So as far as integration with like the, already existing institutions, I'm not a huge fan of it. Like, you know, in 2018, like a Bitcoin ETF was like the big meme, still the big meme when this happens, like all of these good things, or the price rips. I'm kind of in a disagreement with that, because it seems like the more integrated it gets with the traditional financial system, the more control they
and
have.
Manipulated over. It can become, yeah.
So more so on the price. But yeah, KYC services, for example, is an attack on Bitcoin, in my personal opinion. Being able to, these individuals are acting as gatekeepers. So it's like, one frustration that I have is like, you know, sit down with somebody who's like, oh, here's a way to route around the system that is really harmful to you. Now go put in all your personal information that will get stolen by a hacker and, you know, put all over the internet, within, you know, a few months probably.
Yeah.
And then be, you know, subjected to all the nonsense of the system. And so, you know, all of this stuff about like countries adopting it and being friendly towards it is interesting and cool. But what's really interesting is individuals in those countries. And so like a really cool example of where this is happening is Nigeria, where the country, has gone back and forth, kind of like China banning it, you know, unbanning it, banning it, and adoption rates have skyrocketed, and people are exchanging on peer-to-peer markets, primarily. And it's one of those countries where a large portion of their GDP is coming from outside of the country. So people coming to, you know, to European countries, the United States, working, sending funds across, and Bitcoin's the best way to do that. And so there's a massive, you know, use case and skyrocketing thing. But like Bitcoin is a better money, and it's a better money for a variety of reasons. It holds its value over time, which is huge. That's absolutely massive, and people really underestimate the importance of that. And, you know, there's a lot of volatility, but it's volatile upwards, and part of the reason is because we're just, you know, the world's trying to figure out what this thing is and what its value is. You don't need permission to exchange it, which is a pretty big deal. And you can exchange it with anyone anywhere in the world. So, like, if I was to give you cash right now, I wouldn't need permission to do that. But if you were in Venezuela, for example, who's experiencing terrible hyperinflation over the last while, I couldn't necessarily mail you cash, or even if I could, that would take forever. There's restrictions.
Cash is probably going to go away anyways.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Oh, right. The one free money we kind of have, like, yeah.
Yeah. And so that's actually like a really good point of like why I think Tucson in particular is a really cool spot, because we have a massive cash economy. And I think it's important, you know, to educate people and help them transition from cash to Bitcoin instead of cash to whatever dystopian alternative.
Yeah, CDBC.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's CDBC?
Central Bank Digital Currency. So, yep. Yeah.
And did you hear what he was talking about earlier about KYC? You know what that is?
I don't.
Know your customer. So it has to do with capturing a sufficient amount of information about a client or a customer or somebody that you're looking to do business with.
Security number, ID, everything. They want to know exactly who you are.
Yeah.
So that they, because then once, and then you're completely locked in, because Bitcoin is completely traced. Like, if Bitcoin's completely public, if you're attached to the information that's there. So if your name is attached through a, you know, it's like, okay, Sunny bought Bitcoin from this exchange, and now the rest of that Bitcoin's life, it's tracked. You know, it's all on a ledger. So the only way to, like, keep it really private is if you have a way to obtain Bitcoin where your name isn't being attached to a transaction, like through mining. That's why one of the reasons why I got into mining was because I wanted KYC-free coins sent to a private hardware. You know, that's like huge incentive for me, wasn't, you know, because other, you know, like I could just dollar cost average on exchange or whatever, and that's good too, but it's like, for me, I love having like, what, like I've, you know, I feel like I'm freshly minting coins that are like, you know, they've never been, it almost feels like they're worth more than regular Bitcoin, wouldn't you say? Like, not that they actually are, but it just feels like, it's like, to me it feels you know, I don't know. I just get a lot of, I like that they haven't been
take a lot
exchange.
Of pride in that authentic, that authentic mining power, huh?
Yeah.
Hey man, nothing wrong with it.
Yeah. And so you're also in the mining industry, you said, right? So, so you've got to have like a deeper appreciation for Bitcoin, the network, blockchain, and the whole nine working in the industry. So what is it that you do exactly? So you sell rigs, do you sell like all that? And
yeah, we do a bunch of stuff. So we help deploy equipment and we sell the equipment.
Okay.
We buy equipment. So we do.
And you're right here in Tucson?
We're based out of Phoenix. Okay. So I kind of split up my week between being up there and working down here.
Okay.
Works out well with the meetups up there. So yeah.
How deep do you have to dig when you're mining for Bitcoin?
It's pretty deep. It's, you know, it's auto adjusting. It's, there's a, yeah, the difficulty adjusts automatically depending on like how, you know, how many miners there are, depending on the hash rate. So it depends on it's whatever it needs to be to make it to where there's a block every 10 minutes, right? Like, it's adjusting the difficulty to make sure that the network runs how it's supposed to run. So yeah.
What is
it's more
this
like
process?
It's more like, how big is your shovel? Like, and we used to, you know, you used to mine with a little, you know, your processor on your computer, and you could mine like a couple Bitcoin in a week or whatever. And now you got to spend, you know, $1 million on equipment to, you know, or a lot of, you know, a good amount of money on equipment to do anything like that.
Yeah. So in regards to mining, so you know, that's one of the key terms that I got right up here for us, just in case. So I'll just read it verbatim off, so, and then you tell me what you think, if you guys feel it's pretty close to what it is. So the process of verifying and securing transactions in a blockchain, incentivized by the rewarding of new Bitcoin to those who participate. Bitcoin mining is a process of creating valid blocks that add transaction records to Bitcoin's public ledger, which is called the blockchain. It is a crucial component of the Bitcoin network as it solves the so-called double spend problem.
So mining secures the Bitcoin network,
validates transactions, and moves blocks.
So as moves, you know, the transactions, the more blocks. Mining we have, the more hash rate we have, the more power we consume, the more powerful this thing becomes, the more secure it becomes, the more activity it can, you know, safely you know, protect. Does that make sense, Alex? What would you add to that?
Yeah, I mean, so it's really difficult to explain Bitcoin in like terms that people understand and already know. So, like, why is it called mining? Well, what do you do when you're mining for metals? You know, you're putting effort to extract something. So that's essentially what's happening in Bitcoin mining, is you're putting effort forward in the form of electricity and, you know, the capital that you need to use to buy the equipment that you use to mine to essentially extract Bitcoin. front the Bitcoin network. So that's that. Now, you have to understand the difference between like a centralized system and a decentralized system. So having running a decentralized system is incredibly difficult. It is not very easy. It's not very efficient. It uses
a lot of energy.
Uses a ton of energy in the case of Bitcoin. A centralized system, so like, you know, say Visa, for example, like when you go and swipe your card, there's a server somewhere that just is operating, like controlling, you know, that the exchange of numbers from you to, you know, the pizza place wherever. With Bitcoin, though, there's all of these different computers all over the world, tens of thousands of them, that have to come to agreement on what just happened.
And that's nodes, right?
Yep.
Right, nodes versus miners. Yep. Nodes is,
So how do you come up with a way for all of these nodes to come to an agreement on what just happened? This is where proof of work comes in. So these guys are essentially competing to solve the problem. And, you know, it is done this way essentially to prevent, you know, a person like me who's like, oh, I just want to like create fake Bitcoin and send it. It prevents me from doing that. If I tried to do that, it would get rejected, essentially. So it's a consensus mechanism to help the network essentially like process new transactions and come across it. So, yeah, that's a. It's difficult to get into, like, to really, really understand it on a deep level. You have to.
I mean, I've been learning about this stuff for like 4 or 5 years, and I still feel really stupid. Like, I feel it's like it's like
I put a little something. Curve. I mean, I added something because I figured we'd run into some of these topics, right? Proof of work. What is, you know, what is it when you say a consensus mechanism? Some people aren't going to really like, what does that mean? But it gets to that. It answers that double spend problem as well, because, you know, the consensus mechanism is just, it gives us the ability to validate that, you know, that these two things match up and they're aligned, right? And it shows here, you know, what I've at least from stuff that I research, it's showing us that, you know, it allows blockchains to operate securely, and the consensus mechanisms keep blockchains secure by allowing only genuine users to add new transactions. So how do you, you know, coming from mining and you know, having your own node, doing the mining on your own as well, like, how do you know anything about how, like, they validate, you know, which transactions are which, or which ones are right, which ones are not? Like,
I don't know much.
Do we know any of the back ends to that kind of stuff? Works.
Sure. So Bitcoin's a ledger, and what a ledger is a record of transactions. So each of us, you know, the four of us sitting here could each bring $100 bill, or, well, that would be, yeah, okay, we'll just use that example, $100 bill. And instead of, you know, we're gambling, you know, back and forth, and somebody goes up, somebody goes down, you just notate that on the ledger. And then at some point we decide, okay, we're going to settle. And, you know, Christian ends up with $300. I end up with zero. You know, each of you, or Nathan, yeah, we both get screwed. So Nathan.
Yeah, Christian is an asshole.
I'll take it. I'll allow it.
No, not the asshole, the winner. So that's kind of what, like, a ledger is. It's a record of transactions. So all of the Bitcoin lives on the ledger, essentially. So what you're doing when you're sending a transaction is you're just broadcasting that this amount of Bitcoin is moving from me to somebody else on the ledger. And so what you do when you broadcast a transaction is you attach a fee to it. And the fee determines how quick or slow it goes through. There's a marketplace for this that the miners then, you know, pick up on. It's like, oh, a higher fee, I'm going to allow it through first.
Okay. And if you want your transaction to be done quickly, you can choose to pay a little more.
So it's interesting.
Decide, yeah.
Yeah. And then, but yeah, as far as validating it, like, because all of the Bitcoin is kept track of, and we know all of the Bitcoin in circulation, if somebody tries to enter in or expand the supply for some reason, it gets rejected because everybody has a copy. of it that's running a node, and the miners are running nodes, and so they won't even. They'll just get rejected essentially.
Okay, very interesting. Yeah. Okay.
So earlier, I think you had a good question about, Sunny had a question about the, the environment and electrical use. You've heard that, right? That Bitcoin is.
Yeah. So I just heard that it was really unsustainable, and that
would you say in your world that is the thing that stands out to you as like, maybe a thing that like kind of hits you as like, oh, maybe this thing isn't a good idea, or is that kind of
like a red flag,
a standout thing, or a thing that you hear often?
I don't hear it often, but I think that everything has a balance. There's good and bad with anything, and we just take that, I drive a VA truck, fortunately when I need firewood, I can go camping, but unfortunately when I have to go and hit the gas pump, or know where those fumes are going in the environment, yada, yada. So I guess I was just curious, like, in what way is it, unsustainable, or is it, less environmentally friendly than it could be?
And the slide Christian has up, I think this is another, something else I want to talk about, because that's what everyone says. Well, you're supposed to move to proof of stake because that's the new technology where you don't have to mine. And I'd like to hear Alex speak on that, proof of work versus proof of stake, and like what are the, negative sides of Bitcoin? What is the impact, in your belief on the environment? What'd you have to say about all that?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. There's these accusations being lobbied, coming from various different individuals with different incentives. So some of it is like, altcoin scammers trying to pump their bags. So like Chris Larson from XRP, which is a very, very bad.
You can speak freely here.
Yeah. I can say shit coins.
We love talking about shit coins. Okay, cool. So, yeah. Shitting on shit coins. We enjoy it.
Yeah. So Chris Larson says, change the code. And it's not that simple. First of all, there's never really been any clear example of proof of stake actually working and accomplishing what it said it's going to do. So every example of proof of stake that we have right now, it's like, oh, we're going to get there eventually. We're going to scale. Charles Hoskinson, one of the biggest scammers out there. That's his whole thing with Cardano. Oh, it's only a couple of years,
And people love him.
Yeah.
People either love him or can't stand him, because either you're buying this big grand promise that he's selling or, sorry.
Yeah. I mean, like if anybody's listening that is into I got into Cardano in 2018 and it took till about 2020, 2019, I learned pretty quickly that Bitcoin was the most important one, but it took me a while of learning to realize the altcoins are just total scams.
Right.
And 2020 was like when it really flipped for me, and I realized Charles Hoskinson's building a social credit system in Ethiopia. Yeah. Great. That's probably not something I want to be a part of. But like kind of going back, so there's the shitcoiners that are like, Bitcoin is bad, for what variety of reason, buy my stupid token to pump my bags and make me rich. I just essentially created something out of nothing, and now all these people that don't know better are going to get ripped off. Like just happened with Luna, happened with countless shitcoins out there. And then there's the individuals that want control over you, and like energy usage, particular like the gasoline, allows you to travel freely. So this is my kind of conspiracy theory that I'm going about, and you can kind of see it.
We're all ears, buddy. Let's hear it.
Nothing's off limits. Yeah.
So you see what they're doing right now. They're installing, writing through bills, to install kill switches in cars. Mm-hmm. They want cameras in your cars watching you. They want breathalyzers in your cars. Which I like think drinking and driving is absolutely terrible, but I also think treating everybody like criminals is just morally and irreprehensible. That's not a society I want to live in.
It's not cool.
And then they're trying to put caps on our ability to use energy with passing carbon taxes. And so there's this attempt right now to, individuals like the World Economic Forum, which, you know, just put out a video about this, or like, about Bitcoins. I forgot. They said, like, by, I think they published in 2016, they said that by 2020, Bitcoin would use more energy than the entire world. Yeah. And, like, today it uses 0.006% or 0.06% of the entire energy usage. Like, Christmas lights use more electricity. So I just want to preface that, like, the people launching these attacks are not, like, they're anti-human or they're just straight-up scammers. And all of this is verifiable, which is pretty cool. So if you shouldn't believe me and you shouldn't believe anybody talking on this subject, you should always go and, like, do a deep dive into it and understand it. And, like, it is a difficult process to, like, really learn about this stuff because it's new and it's nuanced and there's a lot. But as far as, like, you know, the quality of the electricity that miners are using, that's also a very nuanced example. Like, I mean, if you are using, like, there's some power generation that's harmful to people. Some coal plants are not, you know, very advantageous for people to live around. Sometimes fracking is not good for people's local water. And, you know, there can be a discussion there. And it's a hard discussion to enter into, though, right now, because it's not being had in good faith by the individuals launching accusations. I don't think the solution is solar and wind, just because Bitcoin mining is so incredibly energy dense. Even though it can be a discussion, you can, like, the cool thing about, like, what I think, you know, what we've seen in the Industrial Revolution, you know, with the advent of electricity, we've seen a lot of human flourishing at a massive scale. Like, we are sitting in an air-conditioned room in the middle of the desert when it's 100 degrees outside, and that's, you know, super phenomenal to be, like, this comfortable. But then you also look at, like, the hospital systems, which, you know, I'm not a big fan of, but, you know, to some extent, they've extended of life expectancy. You look at, you know, just the way our economy works, the way that we're interconnected, can communicate, like streaming on Instagram, doing this podcast, you know, doing a lot of cool stuff. It's because of reliable electricity. And, you know, there's a lot of developing countries out there that don't have reliable electricity, so they can't have, you know, stuff that we take for granted. Like, in their hospital systems, like, you know, just basic things like ventilators, you know, to keep people alive or to do surgeries. Like, I mean, if you can't even keep the lights on, like, how are you supposed to, like, do these things, these basic things that, you know, we take for granted? And where Bitcoin mining really can play a role there is, you know, incentivizing the build-out of electricity. If you can go into a lot of these African countries where they have a lot of issues, but they have a ton of energy, and you can capture that, and there's a financial incentive that is massive to go in there and start mining. Like, we're seeing it in some places right now, like the DRC, which has notoriously been the most, you know, manipulated and pillaged countries in the entire continent, is starting to get into Bitcoin mining. And what we'll probably see of that is, like, you know, To mine Bitcoin profitably, you need consistent electricity. And so you're changing the incentives around in a way that will benefit individuals. And you can have the nuanced conversation, but like I said, it's kind of difficult to have right now because people are, you know, there's people that want to control you and they want to see you sick and they don't care about you. And then I want to, you know, also preface, like, the military, you know, Bitcoin ends endless wars, hard money in general. Like, if we went back to a gold standard today, you know, we wouldn't see all of these wars because it's costly to do that. You have to actually sell individuals in your country's bonds to fund the war. So you essentially have to borrow from your people, or you have to raise taxes instead of just devaluing their income and savings. And there's a lot of friction in doing that. And so it would be a lot more unpopular. And so, like, George Bush this week, you know, was criticizing Vladimir Putin and all the terrible things that he was doing in Ukraine right now, and slipped up and, you know, mentioned Iraq. And like, this is something that, like, you know, really bothers me about being an American is, like, I live in a country that has been the biggest purveyor of violence in the world for, you know, my whole lifetime and for longer before that. And I hate that. You know, I hate the fact that people are getting taken advantage of. And then if you want to talk about the environment, like, how is dropping missiles on people, like drone striking people, good for the environment?
Yeah.
How is flying all of these planes all over the place? Like, we live right next to Davis-Monthan. Davis-Monthan is definitely not good for the environment. Yeah. It's incredibly destructive. I don't care if you use electric cars, Joe Biden in the future. Like, none of this, it's all a waste. It's a destruction of human life. You know, just be like, you look at all these wars and, like, what were they fought for? I mean, we don't know. Like,
yeah. We can say money and power, but
they want us to believe that it's this battle, you know, that we got to do something to fix this thing. And there is a discussion to have, but that's not what's happening. We're not having a discussion. This is just a narrative that's being put out there to, you know, it's all just distraction. It's just another psyop. It's like everything else happening right now to keep your eyes off of the truth, you know. So then when we don't have any food or water and, you know, and it's $150 for strawberries, they can blame it on X, Y, and Z instead of like, oh, no, this is the road we've been traveling for 100 years. And then it got accelerated, you know, when we got off the gold standard, and then it got accelerated, you know, 2 years ago. Like, how much of the money have we printed in the last 2 years? Like 80% of it. Like, it's
something
wild,
ridiculous.
Right?
Like, yeah,
it's like 40%.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. It's insane. So there's like something happening that's like, it's already happening. It kind of already is. It's inevitable. And it's like, it's painful kind of to watch it unfold slowly and hope that people start, you know, picking up on it before, you know.
I think the one thing I really enjoy about Bitcoin as a whole is that it's dimensional depending on where you are. Right, like the way we use it here is used in a, you know, is really in a different way than where how they use it in Nigeria or in
here
India
we trade
or in
it.
Ghana, right?
Here
like,
we
yeah,
trade it for dollars.
We use it. We try to use it to, like, you know, puff our back. Not even necessarily. Like, if for an individual like me going into Bitcoin, I saw it as an opportunity to expand the purchasing power that I once held when it came to dollars, right? And now it's like, you know, the way we use it here, the way we think about it here is different than where it's like the way it's being used in other places.
Because we're really lucky here. I mean,
we're lucky to a degree, right? You know, but then we, you know, out in Nigeria or Venezuela, where their currency is hyperinflated and their dollar or their money out there is being, you know, the value of it is jumping right up and down. Like, how?
And so, yeah, there's like, to get people out of that mindset of speculation and into the mindset of like, this is the future. Like, you know, I think there's got to be a certain amount of pain, like, you know, like how much that's inflation do we have to see before people start seeing like, oh, wait, this isn't about I can get this many dollars for it. It's about this is the only thing to hold on to if you want to even have, you know, like this is your opportunity. This is your chance. It's not, you know, don't think of it as like intergenerational wealth. Think about it like this is how I'm going to set. This is, you know. It's not about like, oh, if it was $1 million, I could sell it. And then it's like, you know, $1 million isn't going to be worth that much by then. Anyways.
Yeah. Awesome point. Yeah.
We're going to be looking at a very different world when Bitcoin is $10 million. But you're sure not going to want dollars. You know, you won't even look at it that way. You'll look at how many Satoshis you have, you know, which is, you know, one. Do you know what a Satoshi is?
That was the creator, right?
Yeah, and it's also like it's like a fraction of a Bitcoin that's like 8 decimal places out, right? Is it 8?
Yeah.
100 million per one 100 Bitcoin.
Million. Yeah, yeah, so there's 100 million Satoshis per one Bitcoin. So that's one thing is people get like scared by the price, thinking like, oh, wow, it's already, you know, $30,000. Like, that's a lot, right? Seems like a lot. But if you look at the price of like Satoshis, which is a much better scale to look at, because when you're only looking at 21 million Bitcoin, that's nothing. Like, that's not enough that's, you know, 21 million of something compared to dollars. You know, I don't know what, you know, the world is worth, what the, you know, but it's, you know.
I know what we're working towards, though, making sure that this, the infinite value of everything in the known cosmos is going to be condensed down into 21 million Bitcoin. That's what, always a funny
what,
idea.
What would you say Bitcoin doesn't eat?
As far as financial assets.
Yeah, I don't.
I don't know. I mean, I think, like, what's really exciting for people is, like, there's two things that should be absolutely irrelevant in our lives, and it's politics and economics.
Yeah.
And yet they're very relevant in our life today, and that's what Bitcoin offers. So, like, when you live in a hard money standard, you're not forced into stupid investments like 401ks and, you know, Tesla stock and whatever else that none of us have any business owning, because we don't know anything about it, and we have no way to verify, you know, what's going on behind the scenes, and it's not vaporware. And what you can begin to do is begin building equity in your own life. So you hold savings in money. So the money that you earn retains its value, so you're not forced in these stupid investments. And then you can go out and dedicate the value that you've earned from your labor towards other endeavors, like starting a business or investing in a friend's business or doing other things that, you know, can make you money in the long run. And you'll be a lot better off than building equity in all of these over-financialized dumb things like houses. And like, right, a house isn't an investment.
Yeah. People should be able to buy, I just accidentally said sheeple. People should be able to buy houses, right? Like right now, like the housing, every house is, they're exploding in price, and yet no one can make enough money to afford these houses. So we're just going to end up with a bunch of empty houses that are overpriced that nobody can afford. And yeah, the house shouldn't be a store of value. It should be a place for people to live. Right. And how do we verify, like, what these stocks are worth, these equities? Like, some of these things seem, like, incredibly, like I've heard that, like, Netflix isn't even, like, a profitable business. It's all just, you know, BS. It's all speculation. It's all just driven by the you know, market psychosis. Just people, I don't know. It's insane.
Yeah, it's a pump and dump. So what you look like when you look at all of these companies that start in Silicon Valley, it's kind of the Silicon Valley model. Is they essentially, there's some people that set off and they're like, I want to, it's kind of like flipping a house, but you flip a business. So I want to create a business and I want it to be worth as much money as I can in the shortest amount of time as possible. So then we can go public, people buy the stock or whatever, and you just dump it on them. And so you don't have to be profitable. You just have to meet all these metrics. And so there's a bunch of people with money called venture capitalists or VCs that just continue to pump money into these companies to try and make them as value as possible in financial terms, not in value to the user necessarily. So, you know, we've seen this with Coinbase, you know, is a great example. It's trading like a shit coin. It pumps or gets ICO'd and then dumps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Peloton's a great example of this happening recently.
So is Coinbase not a good place to buy?
It's probably one of the worst places. Just from like an ethical standpoint, the way I see it is, it's the one that I started on, and it's the one that most people start on. It just has brand recognition, but they're actively engaging in the problem as much as possible, and they try and suck you into all these stupid, you know, scams, essentially. Like, they're like, I'll give you my free shit coin, you know, $5 worth. And, you know, people get sucked into it. But, yeah, they're, like, actively working with the feds, essentially, to surveil people as much as possible. And I think that's, you know, going back to, like, you know, it's just morally irreprehensible, you know, the behavior that these people have, where they think that it's appropriate to do that. Like, you know, this country... I'm personally not a big believer in it, but this country was founded on the idea of innocent until proven guilty, and yet everybody's being treated as guilty until proven innocent. Mm-hmm. And Coinbase is a big problem with that. And where they're different than the other companies that are strong-armed to doing similar things is they pursue ways to actively do it before they're proactive. Forced to.
Yeah. So we said that maybe stay away from Coinbase. Who do you like? Where do you like to go?
As far as like
I recommend
KYC regulated exchanges, I like Swan Bitcoin. I like Strike. I like Cash App. Those are good options. Something we try to do. So I help organize meetups across Arizona. So something I try to do, we have mostly on ramps to buying Bitcoin at the meetup where you don't have to put in any of those personal identifiers. You're definitely limited in the capacity that you can buy, because we're, you know, playing with loopholes and it's legal, but we're playing with loopholes. That might get closed in the future. So you're limited to like $900 a day. So, you know, for some people that just doesn't make a lot of sense. Cause like I had a guy come to the meetup, like, how do I acquire $100,000 worth of Bitcoin?
Right.
And like, you're not going to be able to do it with me.
At $900 a day, sir, we are going to calculate that at.
But where I think it's powerful is like the average person isn't buying $100,000 at one time.
Yeah.
They're putting little bits of their paycheck in. And so, you know, the Bitcoin ATMs, they're everywhere. A lot of people use it. It's taking advantage of this cash economy.
Do those collect KYC for the most part?
It depends on the one, but typically it's just a phone number and you can use a burner phone number or burner email. I don't think it's as advantageous.
And you're probably kind of limited and the fees are probably high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of one of the challenges is like, how do you create on ramps that are have the least amount of friction that people can get into? And unfortunately right now it's just very clear that the KYC options are the best.
Yeah, the easiest.
And another thing to consider when purchasing Bitcoin is like, are they actually giving you access to your Bitcoin? Are you actually able to withdraw that Bitcoin from that exchange and put it into a private wallet? Mm-hmm. Then you actually have Bitcoin. When it's in your wallet, in your possession, you have the keys to that. And that's like another discussion. Actually, at the end of this, we'll set you up with the wallet and you'll learn a little bit about that.
Yep,
once you have that, then it's like you have the Bitcoin. When it's on the exchange, you know, I was going to say is a lot of places like you don't even have that option. Like with Robinhood, you're just speculating. You know, it says on a screen you have this many Bitcoin, but try to do anything with it. You don't have anything.
Right.
You're just, and I'm curious if you've heard that. I've heard that there's like a lot more claims to Bitcoin than there is Bitcoin, yep. You know, on exchange, which yep. is like, which is exactly, this is why that is fiat 2.0. This is the thing that we're trying to get away from, the derivatives and the paper and the, you know,
futures.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So with all these, especially the lending companies, so there's like companies that supposedly give you a yield when you deposit.
I got fucked by Nexo.
Oh, really?
Christian kind of did too. Yeah. You know Nexo? That's one of the lending.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt.
No worries. I mean, it's just what happens.
I'll allow it.
Yeah. So they essentially do what's called fractional reserve lending. So they, so you think you have Bitcoin in your account, but it's all getting lent out, and they don't like if everybody tried to withdraw at once, they couldn't. It's kind of like
fractional reserve banking,
yes.
Right?
Kind of like what we've been doing.
Yeah,
like kind of like go to the bank and try to even get 10 grand out with calling ahead of time, and they'll give you shit.
Uh-huh. Even five, dude. They're not messing around. But go ahead. I'm sorry. It just as soon as you said it, I'm like, oh, that struck a chord.
Yeah. So like, if you get into Bitcoin and you're just in it based on the watching the number go up and you're using services like that and leaving your Bitcoin on the exchange, you're actually probably encouraging price suppression. So that's one argument against it. And then, what I explain to people is like every other asset you have in your life has counterparty risk, meaning that it's probably with a custodian of sorts. So the money in your bank, massive counterparty risk. Like we saw this in 2008, the banks are not very stable. Like they try to appear. All the money in your brokerage account, good luck withdrawing that in a time of crisis or anything happening. We live in a time of crisis where things could go wrong really fast. Mm-hmm. It's not like, you know, the 1980s were, well, the 80s were kind of crazy too, but it's not like times in the past when things seemed a little bit more economically stable. It's like we're arguably in World War III right now. It's crazy. So you don't want to be in that situation. And so Bitcoin, when you have it and you secure it properly, which is a whole journey to go down in and of itself, and again, it's very nuanced. A lot of people have a different opinions, but when you have it on your wallet, you have your keys backed up, it's very difficult to take from you. And so, you know, it's like I have this joke of like, you can own, you don't own your house, you pay property taxes, you're essentially leasing it from the government. If you don't pay those, they take it from you. And most of the times the bank owns it, and you're just leasing it from them until you pay it out. You don't own your paycheck, you can get fired at any time, or get your business shut down because you're essentially asking for permission to have the business in the first place. You don't own your body, you know, because there can be all these mandates that come across you. You know, somebody could come and, you know, put a boot on your neck and end your life. But you actually own Bitcoin because if you have it properly secured, nobody can ever access it.
You could even memorize your seed words.
Yep.
It could only exist in your mind. What do you think about that?
26 words or something?
Yeah, well, usually 12 or 24. Yeah. And then there's like a, you know, and then with the wallet, you can add layers like a passphrase or, you know, PIN numbers. So it's like, it's pretty cool stuff, but it requires a lot. You know, there is a process, a journey of like getting over this hump of like actually securing your own value. It's really something quite different that we're not used to.
Yeah. I mean, it's a massive change in the way that we understand property and property rights, the ability to make it super difficult to take from you. And everywhere, you know, has different threat vectors. So like in El Zante, El Salvador, where this whole like Bitcoin movement in the country started, like people were predominantly living in like shacks that were not secured like our houses in the same way. Not that our houses are that secure, but they're less secure. And they predominantly had cash. And so family members could take it. Anybody could walk in, you know, and take it. And going from that to having your money on your phone, because these people didn't have banking services like we do. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they had debit cards and Venmo or whatever. Going from that to having Bitcoin securely stored on your phone to the point where it's much more difficult for people to take it. Massive, massive shift where now people can really start building savings. Mm-hmm. And so it's huge. It's huge.
I think that for me, there's something magical also about like, you know, if you have it set up to where like your direct deposit or something gets converted to Bitcoin right away, or you're doing dollar cost averaging, there's something cool about having money that its default in my life, since I'm a miner, at least like its default, my default money is my savings. Meaning I don't make money and then put money into an investment or into a savings. It's like the money that comes through, that is the money that's going up in value. So it kind of changes the way I spend. It tends to turn people into savers. It tends to really improve people's relationship with money in the future. And like you know, Alex was talking about, it changes your time preference. And it's like, even if you don't understand these concepts, if you start holding Bitcoin and you start, it takes time, but it really incentivizes like people to live more simply and sustainably and like plan for the future. And it kind of gets rid of greed. It makes you feel more giving because the money you have goes up in value. It's pretty magical. Feels good to be a Bitcoiner.
What was it? What was it, Sonny, that really like drew you in? Like, what about Bitcoin or
is he drawn in?
What is it that, I mean, other than
I mean your hair.
Yeah, other than, you know, being my buddy.
Let's see. I guess just kind of getting away from this original system, you know, that we've been taught. And yeah, being able to change that and get into, I don't know, just an alternative kind of thing. It was like, oh, geez, I was in high school the first time I heard about it. And high school or college? So somewhere, I don't know, maybe 2010, maybe 2009, something like that.
Yeah, because like it started in like 2009, so.
Yeah, and it was like
it was barely.
It was like a dollar or something.
Yeah,
and this guy that used to bring over party favors told me about it, and he said it was like a dollar. You know, it was like a dollar a piece or something. It was like really cheap. It was just like regular money, but he used it to be able to go like on the internet and like buy stuff that he wouldn't be able normally to buy.
Yeah.
And
it's good for that.
Yeah, it was.
You
right?
Silk Roader?
That was
I never used it.
But I think people should be able to buy what they want to buy. You know?
Well, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Or make it and you go catch your frogs or whatever. Yeah. And that was the first time that I'd heard about it, and I didn't hear about it again.
Did that guy seem like he had any conviction about it for the future, or did it just kind of feel like it was a tool for him to get the thing he was looking to get?
It sounded like that's all it really was, and that's why he had it, but I just wonder, where is that dude now? You know, like if he just...
Well, chances are he spent it, forgot about it. I mean...
Maybe. He's probably the guy that bought the pizza, man.
Yeah, maybe. People... Oh, yeah, we're eating pizza today in honor of Pizza Day.
What is it? Bitcoin Pizza Day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's always the... You know, people always say like, oh, only if I would have bought it back then, I would have this much. And it's like, no, you wouldn't have. You would have bought it at 500 and sold it at 300 and still be where you're at. You know, like it's not so easy to have that long-term mindset, especially at first. It feels good once you've been around long enough that it's like, you know, for me, when the price is down low, I'm just like, that's more time to get people involved. I really don't mind. I don't care because I'm looking way out.
Yeah. You
know? Get asked a lot less about Dogecoin when the price is down.
Hey.
That's a plus. I don't even know what to say about that stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure it is comfortable when you've been in for a while. I jumped in, fairly heavy for what I bring in.
Oh, I didn't know that you had Bitcoin.
And it was, it was at like 65 or 70. And I thought it was going up to like over 100.
Yeah.
So I was like,
yeah,
dove in. And then now I'm like sitting down here. I'm still holding it and I'm still super
good
hopeful.
Good job.
And,
good job.
Well, yeah, because
that's impressive. That's not so easy. Yeah,
that's the whole deal, right? That you don't lose until you sell, right?
Yeah, you're learning to ride those waves already. That's making it through that is gonna like keep holding it and it'll
yeah. And while it's low too, I mean, I'm sure that it's gonna go back up within 4 years, right?
On average,
It's a miracle to me that it stays this low this long, to be honest.
Yeah.
The news is so bullish. There's so much like it's amazing how well they're able to suppress the price.
How what was your take on it when continuous projections were coming out about it being over six figures or at six figures, you know, all of that was coming out over the past.
McAfee said it was going to be a million by 2020, or he was going to cut his dick off. we haven't heard about that lately.
Poor guy.
Yeah. I fell for it. I got.
I thought we were going to blast right through 100 last year. Yeah.
I mean, good. We're not alone then.
it really is a good reminder. And I got really cocky. I mean, I thought we'd be by at like 250K right now.
Mm-hmm.
Not cocky enough to buy a Tesla, right?
Not any of those guys. No way. No, but I get it. Go ahead.
But yeah, I mean, the amazing thing that's so different about Bitcoin is it's an actual free market. And that's such a foreign concept to us. I read a lot about free markets and Austrian economics and...
Mm-hmm.
And even still, like, understanding and seeing it in practice is a very difficult thing to conceptualize, mm-hmm. Just because we live in a world of distorted, top-down, controlled markets. The price is going to do what it's going to do, and it's just, you know, important to realize, like, we don't have the same buffers in this space.
Yeah.
As a lot of other places, like there's no, like if you get wiped out, you're just going to go raise a bunch of money to continue going forward type nonsense.
No bailouts for Bitcoin?
No bailouts for Bitcoin.
Oh, man, what are we going to do without our bailouts?
And so it was honestly like a really healthy thing for me, this price correction, because it really caused me to like assess some of the risk I was taking in my life and just realize, like, you know, this asset is about covering my bases, essentially, and building off. It's a foundation to build off rather than, you know.
Like a launch pad to rocket you out to the.
Yeah, it's still it kind of reminds us that it's time to do work, right? And keep like working towards, not just like, it's not just go up and. Yeah.
So it's the time in the game rather than timing the game in this aspect. Oh, or
definitely. You can almost have like a conversation with someone and like generally you can kind of get an idea of like how long they've been around, if they've experienced you know, a complete cycle or not, just by how they kind of speak about things.
Yeah.
Cuz there's just a huge such a learning process. So it's kind of great that you got that right off of the bat, because I mean, it as hard as it is to sit with that, that's going to give you so much more strength moving forward. And if you hold through that, you're going to have this like conviction with it that a lot, because like my opinion is like also is like when the markets are dumping, it's like, okay, good. Like get the weak hands out of here. The people that aren't really convicted, it's like, fine, like flush them out. You know, I thought the other day, I want to make a video and I want to make the title be like, sell your Bitcoin now. Cause like, if you read a thumbnail and it says sell your Bitcoin and you sell your Bitcoin, good. Get the fuck out of here. You know, like, cause you know, that's what has to happen. We have to have these corrections. We have to flush it out, reaccumulate, and then, you know, flush out the speculators over and over again. That's all, you know, and like Alex was saying, this is the only like real, true, like free market that we have, you know. And I have conversations with people about capitalism sometimes, and they think capitalism is so evil and so bad. And I believe that like, it's a great thing. I think it's like the only way to do it, but it has to be based on actual free markets. There has to be money that's actually freely exchanged. It can't be about subsidies and who you know and the lobbyists and the games and the, you know, we don't have like real capitalism. We don't have real free markets right now.
Yeah, it's like crony capitalism is a good word for it.
Right.
Yeah. It's like a very fascistic system. And I know that word is like thrown out a lot, but like fascism is the marriage between government and corporations. Where it's hard to distinguish the two is like kind of a technical definition. There's a lot of definitions. It's mostly just like, oh, I don't like you, you're a fascist. But yeah, crony capitalism is a great term to kind of encompass what we have today. Like capitalism is like you producing something and being able to go and sell to somebody else is the simple explanation of what capitalism is. Right. And to be able to do that, you know, fairly unencumbered. And,
right. And then some, you know, and people communicate and decide, well, what's your favorite? You know, the money goes where whoever's got the best product. That encourages like innovation. It encourages people to, you know, make the best food, sell the best pizza, whatever it is, like do the very best thing, because you're bringing the most value versus the crony capitalism.
So I kind of got a glimpse that you might be a little bit of a conspiracy theorist. So what do you think, where do you think we would be if, like, you know, we got
we
our
prefer
breath-
we prefer truther?
Truther?
Yeah. Thinking. Or I do. Sorry.
Sorry if that was offensive.
No,
at all.
No, it's not. No, I'm sorry. Just making a joke.
But, you know, where would we be if the system collapsed and, you know, we didn't have electricity? Yeah, since it uses so much electricity, we didn't have internet. We couldn't exchange anymore. Is there still, like, another way to be able to, I don't know, move that around or exchange it?
Barter.
Well,
yeah, but I mean, that wouldn't be the Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah.
Barter Bitcoin.
Okay, so when you say, like, when you say shut, like, there's no internet or no electricity, that's like a bolt, like, on the entire planet?
Sure.
You're going straight Mad Max, like, because DEFCON.
Sure, I mean, I'm just curious. Like, because it's a digital thing, you know? So I think a lot of people aren't really mm-hmm. I'm comfortable with that. You know, they want to invest, oh, I'd rather put my money in gold or in silver, or, you know, precious metals.
Yeah.
For a rainy apocalypse day. That's how my old man is.
Yeah. You know,
but I'm just curious.
I guess I tend to think that these things will happen, like, all, you know, we're going to have different events that'll be happening in different parts of the world. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of these things happening, but it's not going to be, you know, if it happens all at once everywhere, then we've got some issues with Bitcoin, I would think. But for the most part, it's kind of like this self-healing exists everywhere all at once. So it's like, because the internet is just like, what does that mean to say shut down the internet? It's like, it kind of exists everywhere and nowhere. It's really just a bunch of computers and wires and protocols of exchanging information. So if you have, you know, any individuals that have the ability to hook up their computers together and exchange information, it seems like Bitcoin can exist on some level, right?
Yeah. So,
you don't need the internet to do that.
I mean, there's a bunch of different ways to, you know, transact in Bitcoin. You just need to interface with the network. So there's a satellite that you can buy to run a node on off of the Blockstream satellite if you want to. And you could power it with a solar panel or a generator and essentially, like...
Yeah.
That's dope.
The cool thing about, you know, the Bitcoin world is the people in this are very adversarial minded. So they're always looking at what are the threat vectors. And so this is a reason why we say, like, get your Bitcoin off the exchange. You know, because in a case like that happening, if you have your Bitcoin on the exchange, you're not going to get access to it.
Yeah, it's not yours until you move it to your wallet, right?
Yeah. So kind of the way that Bitcoin works is, or the way that you hold Bitcoin works, essentially, is what you have is you have a private key, which essentially gives you ownership to the Bitcoin on the public ledger. And so tens of thousands of people, maybe hundreds of thousands, I don't know how many at this point, have a copy of this full ledger. And so essentially what you would have to do is destroy every single copy of that ledger to fully kill Bitcoin. So in the scenario that something like that happens, you're probably, hopefully, you're going to have it written down on a piece of paper at least, or even stamped the recovery phrase, those 12 or 24 words into, you know, a steel plate, which is the way to go. And that'll let you recover it when the network comes back online. When you think of the internet going down on that level, the amount of havoc that it will cause, you don't have access to your banking funds. You don't have access to everything else. Like, there's definitely trade-offs there of, like, yes, like, you know, if the cell towers go down and the Wi-Fi goes off, you're probably not going to be able to transact with your phone wallet or with your hardware wallet as easily. And you know, if you're thinking in that terms, you know, there's backups. I don't think gold and silver are realistically going to be that great of a solution. Yeah. The internet's going to come back on eventually, and the power is going to come back on eventually. And if it doesn't, then, you know, Bitcoin's kind of irrelevant at that point. Like, we're dealing with, like,
so it seems safe to say that Bitcoin. So in that scenario, it seems safe to say that Bitcoin is much more resilient than the other things we have going on. And then once it comes back on, talking about miners, like right now it requires all this equipment, but the hash rate would automatically adjust, and then suddenly you'd be able to mine it on the processor on your cell phone. So the network adapts to whatever it needs to adapt to make it functional. So Bitcoin is incredibly simple and elegant, and it can work, and it's very... You know, it can work in a lot of different ways.
So it would just kind of lay dormant if it didn't have any power.
Yeah, it's just a ledger.
I mean, I would imagine that the entire global power infrastructure wouldn't go down simultaneously. And if, like, a large segment of the world's power did go down, you know, the nodes would still continue to operate.
Because they're in different places. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Gotcha. Transactions would still go through. Your Bitcoin wouldn't get stolen necessarily because you have it secured properly.
It'd be a bit like trying to kill all the mycelium on the planet. I don't know if you know.
It's a great metaphor.
Yeah, I've heard some good metaphors there. Yeah, nice. It's kind of everywhere all at the same time, and It's like you could chop off an arm and it doesn't matter. All the information's in every cell of this thing. So it's like
a fractal.
Yeah, right.
So how does it, what can make it more stable? Because I think price-wise? All this is, I think that's kind of what people are used to is like seeing a stability, they think, right, in the dollar. You know,
something I noticed recently is like it's just about as stable as anything right now, really. And in my mind, it's kind of the more stable thing, but like, because that all comes down to a lot of so many factors that are beyond our control. It comes down to traders and, you know, the whales doing their things and manipulation and the media. And but the fact that it's still volatile is kind of an indicator of how early it is, though, too. Because as this thing grows as an asset class, as it has more mass, it takes a lot more capital to move the price to manipulate things. So like right now, it's more stable than it was. You know, I don't know when the last time we've had like a 90% drop or something is. I mean, it was pretty intense when we went from 20 to like 3. But it's like these drops are getting less and less. So as we go up, the volatility, I think it will stabilize to a degree.
Yeah.
And if you zoom out, you got to look at the big picture. Cause if you're looking up close, it looks like this. If you zoom out, it's always been this. You know, we're at the bottom of this logarithmic, like, you know.
This is kind of the best price history thing that I could see that you can kind of validate your 4-year, you know, time frame on average that you'll see, you know, sizable movement.
And this thing, it like, you know, it feels like it's late or that it's expensive or whatever, but it's incredibly tiny when you're comparing it to other equities or other markets, you know, comparing it to anything really. It's still a pretty small asset. It's still still early.
Yeah. Yeah, we're also like there's two things that really bring price stability is it's just the size of the market and it's also pricing physical goods and services in Bitcoin. So like what people do for the most part that accept Bitcoin right now is they price it in dollars and it's just the dollar amount of Bitcoin. So it's you think $10 in Bitcoin for the pizza instead of, you know, 25. I'm not even trying to do the math, but just say 20,000 Satoshis for the pizza. So that's going to be a big difference. But, you know, the volatility goes away when the dollar goes away because the dollar is volatile. Like houses, the median price of houses has doubled in 5 years in Tucson. So that means that like if you were saving for a house, the savings that you were saving in dollars, the savings that you were putting forward towards that house halved in a period of 5 years. And that's a ton of volatility. So we're essentially like the dollar is a shit coin that's going to zero. So like what's the end game for the dollar? Probably eventually $1 million, bills. You know, you're going to be spending $1 million bills on your trip to McDonald's. Yeah. Like, that's the end game of the dollar. So we're thinking in terms that I don't think are super helpful. So it's like, what just happened? Well, the dollar rallied against Bitcoin.
Right. And what happens when, you know, the world starts rejecting our money as the central currency? I mean, which I think that's already happening. Like,
are there, you know, I remember hearing from some woman in a higher Congress or in the ethos of politics, right, talking about how what they're attempting to do, and she said this at the last Bitcoin conference, not this year, but the previous year, that they are attempting to peg the U.S. dollar to Bitcoin somehow. Do you see any truth behind that? Do you think that that's something that's even possible? Do you think that, you know, that that's even, you know, a feasible option for how they can try to control or even, you know, make it more widespread, more adopted? Do you have any ideas around that?
Yeah, I mean, they could do stuff like that. I mean, it's totally possible to, you know, back their stupid currencies with Bitcoin or assets that are actually have value. I think that's probably Cynthia Lummis and like when I look at like Bitcoin and its relation to the political sphere, it's like all these people interjecting with their stupid ideas that have no authority to be making these assertions is the way, you know, I see it. So, you know, as far as like Cynthia Lummis, you know, she's kind of a cool person. You know, she has some good takes on things. And I think what she's trying to do is present things in a manner that is, that these other, you know, political yahoos like can understand and kind of go along with. For the average person, I just say like, do what makes sense to you and like, and do what, is advantageous to you and try to avoid thinking about these people too much and like, try and make them as irrelevant in your life as possible. So, I mean, they could do stuff like that, but like if they're pegging something to Bitcoin, then why not just use Bitcoin? Because Bitcoin's going to be, it's going to be better money. It's permissionless. Like you can use it privately. And it's not that hard to do so. You just have to do a little bit of work, but it's infinitely more private than anything in the fiat system. That sounds like a recipe for disaster, because as soon as they digitalize the dollar or digitalize any of the fiat money and they eliminate cash, it's just a surveillance system.
Yeah.
And it's not something I really want to use.
Okay. Now that makes sense.
If you want your UBI, you're going to have to be all registered up and could probably have your face scanned and your fingerprint and know where you are and not getting your money this month because you were naughty.
That's the universal basic income. That's what you're talking about. Okay. Yeah. At first I was like, what is he talking about?
We're going, cause I don't know what else, they can do. I don't know what the next steps are for kicking the can down the road. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely like different schools of thought. Like what we're looking at right now is we're probably looking at food scarcity on a pretty serious level. We're looking at an energy crisis. And those two things will create a lot of pain for a lot of people, including, you know, a lot of Bitcoiners. And so, you know, kind of looking at how do we mitigate that pain in our life, you know, it's a difficult question. And I think Bitcoin can play a massive role in that as far as us being able to transact outside of the system and try to do those things. But it's like, how do I fill my gas tank with...
Right.
When they're cutting, when they're engaging in price controls and creating fuel shortages, which is a bill that's in Congress right now, which is pretty scary. You might get a $4 a gallon of gasoline, but you only get 2 gallons.
Like, there's another. They got the baby formula shortage going on right now as well as like a big narrative to just, and it's like. Well, I hear about something like
you
this.
You shouldn't be giving that to your babies anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm throwing it out there because my baby's breastfed, but I, you know, I gotta at least adhere to the listeners. But you know, but it's interesting to hear about shortage here, shortage there, this that, and it's like, well, aren't you guys the one generating all these shortages? Aren't these like all a part of, you know, the grand plan of like keeping people under control? Or is like, but you know, I've learned to like, just like what you were saying earlier, it's like, make these things irrelevant in your life, you know, and it's easier said than done. But you know, if we continuously feed into the consumption of like, just BS that's just to help you stay away from things that probably are going to overall be a better decision for you. It's going to be beneficial for your life. Like, you know, I see it, but it's still tough for the average person to go about their lives and kind of turn a cold shoulder to all of these real life things that are happening to other people. You know, it's like that compassion aspect, you know, that factor of like, you know, we're at least, I know one big thing for you is serving others. I enjoyed being that beacon of life here as well, but it's like, how well can you serve others when there's so much suffering going on?
But you got to separate like truth from fiction as well too. And the thing I've learned is like the best way I can serve people is like in a small way, like small interactions, mm-hmm. you know, in a small community, help, you know, encouraging people to like grow a garden or, you know, have a community things where we're making our own food and we're trading directly. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, something like Bitcoin comes in, because that's an easy way to do that.
Yes.
Because, yeah, I think it has to happen, you know, because so many of those things, I don't know what to make out about what's happening in Ukraine. I don't know what to make out of that because I don't know the truth. I don't know what the dealings are in the back room. I don't really understand it. There's all the theories and ideas and we can speculate, but I don't know. So my energy is much better spent on like
focusing on what you can control versus what you can't. That makes sense. Do you have, if any, like, what are the biggest fears that you have about Bitcoin, the network, anything in regards to it? Like, if any, what are your biggest, like, concerns?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, like, a lot of attack vectors to go after Bitcoin. And I think there's this beautiful culture that the Bitcoin users have that make those attack vectors very difficult. I'm much more fearful of attacks on individuals and social attacks. So like, you know, we've seen, you know, different parts of government be weaponized against people over and over and over again, you know, and Arizona has a long history of that, of, you know, interactions between the U.S. Army and Native American populations, like, you know, Chief Cochise, Geronimo were down here. There were people wanting to be left alone that were just wiped off the face of the earth just for having a different culture, different opinion, you know, wanting something that was not in the same... lost my train of thought. Not in the same like track as you know, whatever the more powerful people had in mind. And I think that's definitely like a fear I have, you know, for myself, and for my friends and my in the Bitcoin community, is just like that's definitely a possibility. And we will probably, you know, see social attacks ramp up, people get demonized. Called all sorts of names, and we've already seen it. You know, we've seen it across the board. So like, you guys mentioned the Silk Road earlier, and I am friends with the creator's mom, Ross Ulbricht, the creator of the Silk Road. He's actually in prison in Tucson, down the street from us right now.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Wow!
Wow! Yeah. Brand new information.
Yeah, about that. We really are. And you know his
mom though. Yep. Hey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean she's been
a documentary? Was there a documentary about him? Or was that somebody else?
There's a bunch of, you know, documentaries and movies, some of them like, you know, somewhat accurate and some very unhelpful. But you look at what this guy did, and what he did was he created a voluntary marketplace for people to exchange. And he believed firmly in the non-aggression principle, which is you know, essentially, like, you don't aggress against somebody unless you're first aggressed in. It's the belief of, like, it's kind of like pacifism, mm-hmm. but...
with a twist.
Yeah, with a twist. So very, very different than, like, you know, the stuff that George Bush or Hillary Clinton or, you know, any of these parasites, you know, preach. And he gets 2 consecutive life sentences plus 40 years in prison, you know, and... then, you know, the judge prosecuting that, you know, going back to Coinbase, sits on the legal team for Coinbase, which is another reason why I don't like them. And, you know, what was the sin that he created or the sin that he engaged in? It was doing something that undermined the authority of these individuals. And, you know, I'm pretty vocal about what my intentions are and where I think Bitcoin's going and what it's going to accomplish. And that is, you know, kind of a dangerous position to be in the places that we are, because the majority of people, believe that others should be dominated to a certain extent, you know, for whatever reason. The vast majority of our population believes that, of like, you know, it's a constant game of trying to dominate the other side. And I myself and a lot of individuals in the Bitcoin world stand outside of that paradigm, and it's a massive threat to the narrative. And so, like, going back to, I think it's really powerful for individuals to just say no, you know, because when we say no, like, it was like the last mask mandate that the county put forward, nobody really cared or followed it, and it just had no power. Yeah. Like, businesses weren't enforcing it. And, you know, what are, you know, I'm kind of, you know, very anti-mandate and anti-compulsory anything. But whatever you believe, like, there's probably somewhere that you don't believe in, you know, government forcing you to do something, and you have the right to say, I don't believe in being forced to do that. I have the right to say no to violent coercion. And, but there's a, you know, price to pay if that happens. So, as far as the network, I mean, there's going to be a lot of, like, you know, attacks on, like, wallets and open source developers. There's going to be many attempts to try and, like, break people's faith in Bitcoin. And so this is a reason why it's important, I think, to learn about this stuff and securely store it. But there's going to be a lot of conflicting information put out there about individuals, about, you know, different developers. Like, what's happening with Wasabi Wallet, you know, is pretty interesting. Where they essentially, not them, but one of the services that they use to implement what's called a coin join, which is you essentially pool your coins with somebody else to spend it outwards. It's not a mixing service, like Elizabeth Warren likes to say, but it kind of obfuscates some of the tracking. They decided to start censoring transactions. And, you know, my belief is they were leaned on by somebody, and we're probably going to see that. We're probably going to see the mining pools get leaned on to KYC at some point. And there's a ton of attack vectors that are going to be, you know, tried to exploit. Mm-hmm. And we're starting to get into the then they fight you stage, and it's not going to be easy. But, you know, we've seen these battles before in history. And, like, when I'm explaining Bitcoin to somebody, I explain it to them, like, it's very similar to the relationship individuals living in Europe had with the Catholic Church, where they were the sole arbiters of information. They owned everything as far as that, because they were the only ones that were literate. And when the printing press came along, it completely disrupted everything. And now people could share information outside of what was, you know, being tightly controlled, and it completely disrupted this horribly corrupted institution. And that's just what happens when institutions have a monopoly over anything, mm-hmm. and there's no recourse for what they do, is it becomes corrupted. And but there was a battle. A lot of people got burned at the stake, you know, for translating Bibles and putting them around and having different opinions. But, you know, the market for information was more powerful, and this technology coupled with the market was more powerful. So there's no way, like, the only thing that these people know is violence, like, at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. Why have we had all these wars? Like, there's a lot of speculation it was about protecting the dollar supremacy. Like, why was Libya toppled and disabled? Mm-hmm. Like, there are so many countries out there doing terrible things to people. Including our own, that we're not invading and toppling and destabilizing for freedom and democracy. You know, there was an incentive there to do something like that. And so when you look at, like, you know, Iraq, Saddam Hussein wanting to stop selling oil and dollars, when you look at Libya, Gaddafi wanting to stop selling oil and dollars, you look at all these countries that were destabilized and toppled. Like, looking at these people are still in power, and now I essentially want to do the same thing in my own life. What could they potentially have the capacity to do to me and others? Well, that capacity is pretty high, and that's why I think it's really important we get Bitcoin in the hands of as many people as possible. We get them to hold it in a sovereign manner, not holding it on the exchanges. And when we, like, I think we might already be at that point where we have enough people holding it to the point where there's not a lot they can do. And so, like, the last thing on this tangent is, like, when I explain to people how we win, I say it's very similar to the gun community. Like, a lot of people think, like, guns are so popular in America because of the Second Amendment, because there's words on paper. And, like, I disagree with that. I think guns are popular in America because there's a culture, and they're everywhere. Mm. Tons and tons of people have them. And so if they tried to make them illegal, like, what happens every time they come up with a new restriction? People run to the stores and buy everything off the shelves and make it impossible to get. And that's the same attitude we have to have with Bitcoin as individuals to really win this, is like, when they start ramping up these regulations, we need to run to the stores and, you know, try to route around it as much as possible and say, you're not taking my Bitcoin over my dead body. And, like,
yeah.
Yeah.
So I have a quick question. When you're talking about storing it in a sovereign way, and you mentioned the Wasabi wallet, I assume anytime you're downloading an app and that's your wallet, there's some kind of third party risk there. Like, mm-hmm. Even with, like, my Trezor, if I go to send a transaction, it's sending through their services, right? Mm-hmm. So does that mean, like, is running a node the only real true, like, because then you're actually broadcasting the transaction, you're doing it from your node. Is that, like, is that true? Like, is it, with any wallet, are you looking at some kind of third party risk?
Yeah, I mean, I think the third party risk, like, it's more serious on the Lightning Network, where you're custodying your funds on a custodial wallet. So, like, your traditional wallet, Lightning wallet that you have somebody download.
It's like Wallet of Satoshi.
Wallet of Satoshi, Blue Wallet, you know, anyone that you can start transacting Lightning without running a node, that's more of an issue of funds getting stolen. When you're broadcasting a network from a service like Trezor, it's more about surveillance. That's more of the issue.
Okay.
And so, like, the first step, you know, in Bitcoin is to buy it. And step 1.5 is get it off the exchange onto, you know, a wallet like Trezor or Ledger or Coldcard or, you know, whatever. Yeah. Get it on, or, like, my personal favorite that I've been moving more towards is generic hardware. So, you know, getting an old laptop, putting Linux on it, and using that as my Bitcoin wallet.
Oh, really? Mm. That's interesting.
So you can, encrypt a drive, essentially. You know, there's trade-offs, and you have to, it's a very nuanced conversation. So for the beginner, like,
And it all depends on where you are on the spectrum of technical ability and understanding.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, like, I would say Ledger, Trezor, you know, stuff like that's great. I used Ledger for a long time. I got all my data hacked, so there's ways that you can go about it to be a little bit more secure, and that's another really interesting conversation to get into that's nuanced and long, but
your Ledger got hacked?
No, I bought a Ledger from them, put all my personal info in, used a debit card, and then all my data got hacked. Oh,
wow.
We getting kicked out?
Something like that.
Okay.
Well, we super appreciate you coming on, Alex. Do you have anything that you want to plug while you're on? What do you got going on? I know you're doing meetup groups here in Arizona, which is awesome because I'm here in Arizona. I'm going to be checking them out. But do you have anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, I want to talk about the meetups a little bit. So we've been running them for like a year and a half, and they're fantastic. And I think just it is, I mean, like, from a personal sanity standpoint, like, we live in a crazy clown world, and, like, being surrounded by people that are totally detached from reality is not very good for your health, especially, like, when you see how ridiculous a lot of this stuff is. And so that's one big benefit of the Bitcoin meetup. But I think things like that are really important. Like, even if you're not into Bitcoin, getting around, you know, your tribe and your community of people that are sane, down to earth, like, helping you move away from all this, you know, nonsense that is just trying to make you sick in society. So that's something I want to plug. But yeah, with the meetup, so we're launching, we're in the filing process for two nonprofits right now. One to really like try and get merchant adoption, and which has been a meme since Bitcoin's existence, but we're just trying to get it rolling so that people don't have to, you know, live with a bank account and do all this stupid stuff. And then we're also trying to do one just for individual adoption, like how do you use Bitcoin privately? What does the mining process look like? You know, going into deep dives, offering like really good quality education for individuals. And we've got a lot of solid people at the meetup. So we've got people working in the industry, and we just have, you know, normal people coming off the streets, like curious about it. And we've got people that have just been deep down the wormhole or rabbit hole for a while. So wide range of individuals, and you're welcome unless you're trying to sell your stupid shitcoin.
Yeah. What about more Bitcoin machines? Would that help?
The ATMs. You know,
like, yeah, like the ATMs, Bitcoin ATMs, like if there were those around a lot more.
Yeah.
Because I think that I saw an ad on Craigslist where they were going to pay like $500 per machine that was installed to like go around and install them in different places.
Yeah, they're
like months ago.
They're everywhere in town. They're like in most of your, yeah, they're like in most of your sketchy smoke shops.
Oh, yeah. Smoke shop.
Why is that though?
Those sketchy Bitcoiners.
Okay, what are they? With it, probably,
psychopaths.
Because right? You know, you see, I see them in certain places, but then when you know, there will be time where I'm like walking in a food city or something, and I'm like, that's a Bitcoin machine right there. Like, you know, it's like it's interesting. You know, nothing wrong with that. I don't see anything. I'm glad. I'd love to see more, but you know, is that going to help to contribute to more adoption, or will, you know, these ads that they're running on sporting events and, you know, athletes wearing the Coinbase or the OK coin or the, you know, whatever logos on their jerseys, like does that help as well, you know, to a degree? Or, you know, is that more of the feeding the people like, hey, it's about time you guys heard about Bitcoin, crypto, the whole, you know, ethos of cryptocurrency.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I mean, what I would say is like, drive adoption in the places that you're passionate. And like for me personally, I'm really passionate about this cash-based economy. I'm passionate about people that don't have access to banking in our local community. And I'm passionate about people that like see the world how I do. I have a deep trust for authority, deep distrust for authority, and like want to see human freedom and flourishing. And so like those are the people I'm really intentional about spending time with and trying to get Bitcoin into their hands. And I don't really, you know, care about the person that like turns on CNN or Fox News and is like, oh, here's my marching orders for
the week. Okay. I like that.
That's something that I'm really excited to get involved and show up to what you got going on, because I love hearing that you're working here locally in Tucson. And, you know, we're still a developing platform, and a lot of our followers are here in Tucson, so that works out well. I love building on things locally, and the fact that you're working on pushing forward things with merchants and whatnot. And
it's Sonny,
thanks
my
for
guy.
Being here, Sonny, being you know, bringing some good questions and perspective. And
and we were also at his spot last week doing some healing as well in another way.
Yeah.
And that podcast should be coming out pretty soon as well. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Ecstatic dance your life away. Get to a sacred fire when you can.
Yeah. My girlfriend beautiful loves stuff. Ecstatic dancing.
There you go.
Yeah,
see?
Yeah, you guys will have to come sometime.
Yeah. It's a pleasure meeting you. Really great perspective. I appreciate your insights. I know I've learned a lot.
Same, man.
Yeah.
Good times.
Thanks, man. Thanks you guys.
Everybody for listening. We love you all.
Shades of light, baby.
Thank you.
Thank you.